Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good start to your week and a good day thus far. At this time every Monday, we head east. We go to Knoxville, WNML. The sports animal, Vince Ferrara, joins us at Vince Sports on Twitter. It's free and easy. Give him a follow. You'll be thankful you did. Vince, how you doing?
Appreciate that. I'm good. I'm better than Major League Baseball, but I guess who is it these days?
Oh, boy. Oof. Speaking of that, we talked earlier in the show. We had Bernie Miklas on from St. Louis, who was featured a lot in Long Gone Summer. And did you get a chance to see the 30 for 30?
I did, and I thought it was good. Maybe we were spoiled by how well put together and how great the storytelling was in The Last Dance, that I thought it fell a little short from that standpoint. They did a lot of bouncing around without tying it together. Like, you're able to see the connecting of the dots in The Last Dance more. And I didn't really notice that. So you get a soundbite and a highlight, and the next thing you know, they've reversed back to McGuire with the A's, like, out of nowhere. And so it was the production of it was a little, you know, a little bit choppy, but it was an amazing period. Just remarkable. I'd forgotten about how close for a while Griffey was. So there were things that were neat that you found out about. Then the fact that Tony La Russa said that McGuire wanted out on the final day of the regular season, and when he had a shot at 70, and then, of course, he hits two quick home runs and gets there, just incredible. So I thought it was good. It was obviously very interesting. At least they told the story of the Andro and the performance enhancers, that part of it. But it was good. It wasn't The Last Dance, but I think we were kind of spoiled on it as well. So I'm not going to be overly critical from that standpoint.
I hate to do this on the air, but Marquise, is that my equipment? Was that just a bad reception from Vince? I never know with everybody being in their own places, what was going on there. Could everybody else hear that, or was that just me?
Vince was fine. My end.
Okay. So maybe it was just,
I heard Vince.
Okay, that just happened. All right, that's why I asked. Carry on. Okay, so by the way, I agree with you. I heard most of that. I admitted earlier in the show that, you know, we're such big fans of 30 for 30s, but if I'm being totally honest, that it was okay. I mean, I gave it a B minus, maybe C plus, if I'm just being completely truthful. Depending on the day, I'd probably stick with a B minus, but I wasn't blown away or overwhelmed. I enjoyed it. It's not going to rank up there as one of my favorites all time. But, you know, I don't have any regrets. I watched it. I was just kind of maybe wanting a little bit more. But just thought I would ask and see what you thought.
Yeah, another little thing, and this is just it's not a major thing, but it was something that was so memorable from The Last Dance was the music.
Yeah.
And I thought the music was so odd in The Long Gone Summer. It was so down. I mean, they're showing highlights of home runs and fans going crazy, and they have just this really low music that's almost depressing. And I didn't understand that. I mean, The Last Dance had its own Spotify account that is just such an incredible addition to.
It makes a difference.
To my
I agree. That's a great point.
So, anyway,
I'll tell you right now, you could sell that soundtrack, and you know, there's a lot of cool soundtracks over the years that would be up there for sure. The one to Last Dance, without a doubt. I feel like, gosh, every week we lead with this. It's amazing, but the Vols have added another commit, a 4-star in state. I mean, honk if you've heard that before. Guess a tight end, Hudson Wolf.
Yeah, depending on your publication, each of them had a different top player in the state, but one of them had Hudson Wolf as the top player in the state. He's a 4-star tight end. One of those guys that you can project to play right away because he has the pass-catching ability, but he can block as well. And I'm not sure that Tennessee has a guy like that either on its roster now or committed to this point. There's some guys that project as tight ends in the class. Rock Taylor from Alabama is one that's played wide receiver, but with his frame, kind of projects as a tight end. And they have others, but I'm not sure they have a level of talent like this kid. Now, they have a four-star tight end on the roster from last year's class in Jackson Lowe, but he didn't play a single game last year. And it's still to be determined whether he's going to play out or whether he's going to figure it out or not. I think Hudson Wolf gives you the ability, the potential of someone that can come in and contribute immediately, because there could very well still be a huge question about that position. Plus, today you'd like to have more than one. Jim Chaney loves multiple tight end sets, and what you don't want to be is predictable, where you have one guy that's strictly a pass catcher, one guy that's strictly a blocker. Well, that makes you predictable based on your personnel and who's on the field. So Austin Pope is their most reliable guy that was a tight end, but he was their number two, sort of the blocker, and they lost Dominic Wood Anderson, their pass catcher, last year. And so they're still looking for that, when he wasn't as good of a blocker. So they're still looking for that complete every down threat that doesn't make you predictable based on your personnel. And this kid, if he continues to develop, certainly seems like that. So it was another need position, and it gives you only your third in-state commitment, which is another thing that's been low, but it's not the greatest year class in the state either. But a good get to get him back to 24 in commitments right now, and there'll probably be some more that will drop off, and they'll add some more, as we've talked about.
We just learned today that Ezekiel Elliott evidently has tested positive for COVID-19. There's some players on the Cowboys and some players on the Texans who evidently have tested positive. As we get a little bit closer to NFL training camps, college football, that scene is getting close too, and the players are getting tested at the University of Tennessee as they've started workouts, and so far so good, right? No players have tested positive. I guess there was a grad assistant that did test positive.
Yeah, and he was immediately quarantined, and I'm sure if he continues to get healthy and get back to normal, that he'll rejoin them. But, yeah, I think Tennessee was fortunate from that regard. It's going to happen at some point. You're going to get some tests. I think it's just from a number standpoint, you would expect it. But, you know, Tennessee was lucky from that standpoint, and we'll see how it continues. And once everybody's in the building, then they'll continue to do more testing from within. And then they do questionnaires, and where they have to talk about every day, you got to fill out your questionnaire on, you know, what symptoms you might have, or how do you feel, this, and this, and do the temperature tests and all checks and all those kind of things. So Tennessee is going to be very, very careful, and they should. And there's just, unfortunately, around the country, with Houston as an example, not doing the actual COVID testing, just doing the symptomatic, you're going to have variances on how many kids test positive. And, you know, that's part of the reason why they had to shut down their volunteer workouts for a couple of weeks. So I think Tennessee and the SEC, they're doing it right by being over the top and cautious. And I guess it helps when you're able to get your hands on enough tests to regularly do that.
I'm going to save the baseball stuff, because it was a good day Wednesday and Thursday for Tennessee's baseball program, mm-hmm. for Willie. And I know Chase is going to want to hit you with Alvin Kamara being at the race in Miami, yeah. and supporting Bubba Wallace. But I do want to ask you this, and then we'll come back to theirs on the other side, their questions on the other side. But we're seeing, you know, a lot of rallies and support and things going on in our country and cities all over the country, and we're seeing athletes getting involved. in this stuff. This football season, this sports season is going to be different, especially on the football front. I'm curious, how do you think, you know, Tennessee players just around the league, you know, whether it's SEC or in college football, how do you think they're going to approach making statements before games?
Well, they're, you know, in college, as you guys know, they're not out there for the national anthem. So the kneeling thing is not really in play. Now, I think there's a possibility of smaller, quicker type of things that they could do, say, when they run back on the sideline. You maybe in unison, they could take a quick knee, you know, with all in arms as an entire team, and just as a point of recognition. It's with colleges, it's with your uniforms and things like that. I don't know what kind of great variants that they could do. Maybe UT would do something in terms of some sort of patch or something that they would do as a group. I'm not sure. There's a possibility of videos also, and that's something that each school can get involved with, something that maybe the NFL might want to consider. Hey, we want to back our players. Let's work with them together to get a message out so everybody gets it and nothing is missed here. And we show how important it is, and they're a part of it also. So I don't know the specifics of how they're going to do it, but I think there will be some things they do, and hopefully a majority of the people will have an understanding and not have a backlash towards it and understand the big picture message of what they're trying to get across, instead of focusing on, you know, just do your job and play football and that kind of stuff. I hope there's not that backlash. I think we've made enough progress to where we've, as a whole, you won't see as much of that. You'll see backlash and negative reaction to everything, but there'll be something, just not sure on the specifics at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's going to be something. I just not sure, and I'll be curious to see the direction of where teams and programs decide to go this upcoming college football season. More with Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal in Knoxville on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
12:23 here in Nashville, TN. We are talking over the eastern part of the state with Vince Ferrara here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is Darren Donick and Chase. We're talking Big Orange. And Vince, it was fun to have an event, even though it was not on the field, but at least it took our minds off of the state of baseball at the major league level in terms of the labor frustrations and everything that's just driving us bananas right now. But I did enjoy the draft, and it was fun to kind of take it in. Tennessee had a big day. That was a nice day for them to really be relevant in terms of some of their players. And so I know you follow it very, very closely. So what was your reaction? I think we all knew that Crochet was going to go in the first round. Were you surprised about the other guys, or was that kind of how you thought it would go?
No, I thought it was pretty close, Willie. For sure, Solari was going to go. Daniels was a possibility with his athleticism. I mean, he is rocked up in the uniform. He fills it out like a football player, and then you see him outside of it as well. He's a phenomenal athlete that puts on a show in BP with some of his home runs. Just insane. And to hear the reaction of his teammates, of Tony Vitello and the assistants, talking about the freak power that kid has, it didn't surprise me when he finally put it together to start his junior year. He led the team in average at 357, runs driven in 18, in just 17 games played, had four home runs, and he finally, after struggling his first two seasons, he put it together. So from that upside ability, then I thought there was certainly a possibility. And the way the draft went down, there's so many interesting aspects of it, Willie. We don't have time to get into all of them, but teams were drafting guys that they knew that they were going to be able to sign. with as few draft picks as you had, especially the Astros who are missing draft picks due to their scandal, you can't swing and miss in this year's draft. You have to know the players you're drafting are signable. So yeah. I'm sure that was an indication that Daniels gave him that, hey, yeah, I'll sign with you guys. I'm good to go and ready to get my pro career going. And Tony Vitello even kind of indicated that the way he put it together and what teams thought of him, he was ready for pro ball. So, so all those three guys were I thought, excellent draft picks. And then Chase Wallace signed as a free agent with the Royals as well.
What was the situation? Because I'll tell you what one thing I thought as I was watching it, I was a little surprised how many high school players were picked under the circumstances with that whole signability issue. Not necessarily in the first round, but in the rounds that followed. Were there any signees of Tennessee that now will have the choice, you know, do I sign or do I go play for the Vols? And how many other guys do they think might sign free agent contracts in terms of what their roster might look like for next year?
Well, as far as signees, no. No signees are drafted. Vitello expects the signees to be good to go. You never know with some guys, though. Sometimes guys they want to get their pro careers going, and even though 20,000 is an embarrassingly low cap for those players, some say, hey, I'm ready for pro ball. I didn't really want to go to college anyway. Every kid's situation is a little bit different. And I would think that there would be some guys that have been in school for a while that, because of the numbers crunch that a lot of the college teams are having to deal with now, that maybe see the writing on the wall and say, man, I'd love to come back and get better, but what if I don't get playing time? How am I going to get better? So then they decide, hey, let me go and start my pro career. And, you know, Chris Berg talked about this during the broadcast, that some teams were probably calling the high school players and saying, look, I know this isn't as high as you wanted to go, but if you go back, it might be a couple of years before you ever get to play, because a lot of other guys are in front of you are coming back. So we'll take you at this point, and then, you know, you can skip college and you can get to playing ball instead of sitting on the bench. So there's all those leverage plays. A lot of it just depends on what the kids want. So I wouldn't expect a lot more of the returning players to sign as free agents, but there'll be a couple. There's other schools that I think will be hit harder than Tennessee will. I still think Tennessee will come out of it really good with signees and free agents, coming back to school for the most part.
The whole system over the next few years is going to evolve, no doubt. Let's switch to basketball. Vince, because the basketball players return today, the rest of the athletes in early July. And just like every college campus, I know there's been tons of thought. I was talking to a friend of mine who's actually a friend of my daughter's whose older sister is in college, and they were talking about how the housing is going to change. You know, they're creating a lot more single rooms. They have to find more housing for people. So how is the housing working for the basketball players, and how are they going to try to get back into the flow as they get into some new habits that we all have to have?
Well, the full logistics of it, not sure, because the chancellor, Don DePlatman, said that their dorms, there are going to be 20% fewer dorms available because they needed to keep some available for anyone that needed to be quarantined. So I'm not sure where they were in capacity, how those get pushed out, or the specifics of it. I'm not sure, but you know, without a lot of kids on campus right now, the student athletes are fine for right now. But what is that moving forward? I'm not sure on the details of that, but they'll be somewhere. They'll make sure they have a spot and they're social distanced and they're adjusting to it. So I think they'll be fine from that standpoint.
We're talking to Vince Ferrara, the sports animal, WNML, up in Knoxville. And as Darren alluded to earlier, Alvin Kamara was a guest yesterday of NASCAR for the race at Homestead, as they did allow about 1,000 guests or fans back in, and he was one of them. And this is something that we've seen in the last week since NASCAR made the announcement that they have banned the Confederate flag from races. Bernard Pollard has been watching the sport and become a fan of a Vol fan, Bubba Wallace, as has Alvin Kamara. So what did you think about that? I thought it was a pretty cool story.
Yeah, it was, and he was hyped up about it. I mean, ever since that announcement about the banning of the Confederate flag, Kamara has been very outspoken on Twitter and excited about it, and said he's a new fan, and he's been teasing up until all the way through being there in Homestead this weekend. So good for him. Good for the people that are jumping on the sport and approving of it. I've heard that there's been a lot more of the positive reaction to it than those that oppose it, like that driver from the Truck Series. So, I mean, that's a good thing, obviously long overdue. But with Kamara, he's such a popular guy. Hopefully a lot of people share his thoughts and his open-mindedness about it. And, I haven't really heard negative reaction to it, not from Vols fans, at least.
Yeah, I think it's a positive, and I hope that most people look at it that way. And Bubba Wallace and what he's been able to do, not only for the sport but for society in general, and also his UT connections, because he is a Vols fan. I think it's really, really neat. So I'm glad that that happened this weekend. I looked at your blog that you did about coaches and their connections to the Vols, and one question that popped in my head as I was reading through this, that Jim Bob Cooter, the running backs coach now with the Jets, I mean, there was a time, Vince, that he was a hot name in the NFL as the offensive coordinator with Detroit, and was rumored for, a head coaching job, and he's somebody that I haven't really thought about in the last couple of years until I read your blog.
Well, remember, he was a name that, out of the many that popped up before Pruitt was eventually hired, I guess it might have been during the John Curry run coaching search. Jim Bob Cooter was a name that popped up for a while, and then he said, he kind of took his name out of the running for it. So I guess a lot of coaches would fall into that category of guys that came up for Tennessee coaching searches through the years. But, he was, when he was the OC with the Lions, he was one of the youngest coaches in assistant coaches in the NFL. So he's still a pretty young coach. Bo Hardigree, who was a backup quarterback at Tennessee in the past as well, he's also on that staff as an offensive assistant. So they have two former Tennessee quarterbacks as assistant coaches on that New York Jets staff. So it was cool to kind of dig up a few of those names and see where everybody's landed. Included in those are 7 former Tennessee players, and those are just a couple of them.
Darren? I guess Darren is not back yet. So, Gerard and Mayo was on there too. I remember him playing with New England, and then of course now is done with his career. So, has started the coaching side of things. So pretty cool, good read on Vince's blog. Hey Vince, appreciate it as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. If anyone wants to check that out, it's 991thesportsanimal.com. Great to be on with you guys. Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, Vinny. We'll talk to you next week, every Monday at noon here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. We'll have much more coming next on ESPN 102.5 again.
RockNashville.com is your community resource page. You can check out information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to donate to Second Harvest Food Bank of Middle Tennessee to support their mission of feeding hungry people as well as others. That ways to help Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. rocknashville.com. Good stuff from Vince Ferrara, as always. Former Titans safety Bernard Pollard coming up at 1 o'clock. We've had a really good show today. A lot of things we've touched on. If you haven't seen, Ezekiel Elliott has tested positive for coronavirus. Other players on the Cowboys and Texans have. Ohio State players are going to sign a virus risk waiver this year. And so a lot of things. And we're going to have Bob Costas on the show tomorrow at noon. We had Bernie Miklas on at 10:15 today to talk about Long Gone Summer, the 30 for 30. We had Tron Davenport on in the second hour, and you just heard Vince. So you brought up, and this is what I know, Willie, that clearly you're not happy with the direction of Major League Baseball. I'm not sure where this is going, but it looks like it's going to be a very, 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 very small regular season this year, if indeed they get back out on the field. But there were numerous reports over the weekend, which I have said for weeks, there are also owners, and I don't know the number, I guess a couple, I don't know the exact number, but there are also owners in Major League Baseball that are also saying, you know what, if we don't play this year, so be it. That is there in the wings as well. You don't want to play? Fine. We'll sit out. I'm perfectly fine as an owner. We just don't even have a season. That's not good. None of that stuff is good.
Well, I think everybody wants to play. I think what continues to be the path is the players will not budge off of the 100% prorated salary, which I gave you guys the math equation, right, on a much smaller level. They're turning down the opportunity to make more money just in the name of principle of a day's work, a day's pay. That's their saying, that we should be paid for the amount of games we play. We're not playing any games at a reduced rate, even though they would make more money if they did. As far as what the response is, it looks like they've just kind of thrown it out there. Tony Clark's statement over the weekend was, all right, tell us it's time to play. It's time to tell us where to go and when. The commissioner has the right to put down a schedule and say, here's the schedule we're playing. And I guess the owners will consult with him and say, all right, is the number 48 that, or is the number 50? Is the number 54? You know, there's been a lot tossed out there, but it's not going to be much more than that, I don't think, barring a change of mindset of the owners, because they won't budge off of this is basically the amount of money we have to send towards the players. So again, it's extremely frustrating. No compromise, no partnership, tons of mistrust between the two sides. Trying to win the negotiation now, as opposed to what is going to be the long-reaching effects of it. There's so many things. And all of this to say that they're turning a complete blind eye to what is happening in the country, where so many people have taken a 100% pay cut. And in the coming months, there's going to be more people that take some sort of pay cut, if not 100%. And it's just really, really sad for those of us like me that love the game.
Yeah, well said. And I appreciate your math equation earlier, because that really does put it in perspective. And it's a good way to think about it, but I just think it is going to be sad, because even if we get somewhat of a season, it goes back to the question we had last week of, okay, so how do you feel your team wins the championship? I mean, that's going to be discussed. The negativity is going to overshadow the games that are actually being played of, well, if they had just gotten this done sooner, or if they had just gotten on the same page, you know, we could have had a longer season, and they're just going to be – that's going to be the storyline. And not to mention, you know, some of the stuff that could be coming out with the Yankees, you know, the Astros, that probably isn't going away or shouldn't go away. So it's just – I hate that all the negativity involved with the game of baseball right now is going to overshadow the games themselves.
I'll go back to what I've brought up in the past, just because it looks like it's on a collision course for this. So let's say the number's 54. That is 33% of a normal regular season. 33% of a normal regular season in Major League Baseball. Is anyone truly going to crown the champ and think that they are the same champ as last year's champ in the Washington Nationals or the 2016 Chicago Cubs or I guess the Houston Astros, it's a little bit different because there's a different dynamic in play. But previous champs, is it truly going to be viewed the same way if whoever wins it this year played 33% of a normal regular season?
Yeah, I mean, 33% is just ridiculous. And I'm trying to come up with an example of if it's happened before.
There isn't any.
There isn't one. So that's just the crazy part to me. And you can't sit here like if you're in an argument. I mean, we're going to be, you know, with a bunch of our friends this weekend, Darren, on a guy's trip. I mean, can we really sit there and have an argument this time next year with those guys if one of our teams wins it and say, yeah, we feel great about it winning the World Series last year? No. I mean, 33% of the season, it's just and it could have been avoided. You were never going to get
100%. That's the thing. I would be fine with it if that's all they could have played. But it
because
clearly
of the virus.
Yes. Yeah. I'd feel fine about it if that's all you could play, but there's so many things that are turnoffs about this whole thing. Because even if it's 75 games, you're still thinking this is different than your normal season. We know that going in, but they just didn't make any effort to compromise and be aware of the scope of what's going on here and be a part of the solution, be something that people could, you know, gravitate towards. Baseball needs that, and they've elected to just completely ignore that part.
Because they just wanted to fight over money. That's it. I mean, they wanted to use this.
And it's not even money. As I pointed out before, they would make more money if they played more games. But it's about the principle,
right?
To them, they're very excited that they have held fast. Oh man, the players, they have held fast, and the owners are no better, right? You're telling me that. That's all they can pay, right? This is where the crux of it is, right? They can't pay the prorated salaries for more than 48 games. They can't pay for 60 games that they would go under in this business that grossed $10 billion if they paid the players the prorated salaries for 10 or 15 more games. I mean, but there was just no give and take, right? Why didn't they work together to say, this has never happened before? Let's get through this summer, and then we'll work out all of the issues that have to be worked out long term. It's just unbelievable. It's just absolutely unreal.
There are two guys on the trip I want to definitely pose that to because I would be curious because one is a Twins fan and one is an A's fan, you know. And
yeah,
just like me as an Indians fan, knowing 1948, you know, one guy on the trip's a Yankees fan. Like, I don't, you know, one's a Red Sox fan. It's like I don't want to ask them. Because they've done a whole lot of winning. But I want to know from a Twins fan. You know, let me know from an A's fan. How would you feel if they won it all, playing 33% of the regular season? Would it feel, you know, would you be just as satisfied as under normal conditions? I'd love to hear the answer, and I'm going to find out this weekend. Adam is on hold. What's up?
Hey, man. Yeah, so I wanted to call in because I heard the disappointment in Chase's voice when he said that. But I guess, and I'm a very pessimistic person. I'm a glass half empty kind of guy. But on this particular situation, being that everybody has to deal with the same problem and it's so serious, I would say you would be the ultimate champion if you were to come away and win a World Series right now. It's the same thing with no fans in the stands in the NFL if that ends up panning out that way. No home field advantage, and you end up winning everything. That is like ultimate warrior champion right there. So I think if everybody starts at 33%, whatever, man, it's everybody had the same playing field. Your team wins, and it's still really special, I think.
Yeah, but Adam, the circumstances though, it could have been more than 33%, not because of the virus, but because there's distrust between the owners and the players. And they have they've wasted all this time fighting with each other over whatever, money, or just the fact that they don't like each other and don't trust each other. That's the problem I have. It, like Willie said, if they were only going to get 33% of the season in just because of the virus, okay. that completely changes my feelings. But I'm always going to look if the Braves win it, or in Darren's case, the Indians, Willie's case, the Mets. If one of our teams wins it, we're immediately going to go, yeah, but they probably could have gotten at least 75 games in if they had just figured this out sooner and settled on something and not had this bickering back and forth. I mean, it's wide open for teams now. I mean, the teams that were going to be just the bottom feeders have a chance with 50 games.
33%? Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody's in. I mean, everybody is on the table. No doubt about it. The Nationals were 31-19 last year after 50 games.
Yeah, because if
19-31.
I mean, 19-31 after 50 games.
If we sit here at the end of the season and we're talking about the Miami Marlins winning the World Series, I mean, aren't we going to throw up a little bit?
I think he is in the very, very, very small minority that feel that way. I can't imagine. But because to me, the marker is really at 50%, because all the examples we have in sports, they played at least 50% of the season. I feel like people would feel differently at least if they were able to get 81 in. I think people would feel better about it. Some would still have a problem, but I think the number would grow a lot more of people being okay with 50% of your regular season. If you play 33%, I think it's going to be a small group that feels really satisfied, like somebody earned it. Because when you play 33% of a season in any sport, truly everybody has a chance. And you can't tell me the Miami Marlins deserve a chance. Like I said, 19-31, the Nationals would not make the playoffs. They won the World Series last year. They would be in this format, they would not be playing more than the allotted 54 games. That's it. Their season would come to an end. And under last year's season, after a start like that, they ended up being the World Series champs. I don't think anybody is truly going to go, wow, I am blown away and impressed with this year's champ. I just don't. I think the group is going to be very small. Most people will always say congrats, but you did it playing 33% of your season, and you could have played more.
Right.
That's what I think.
No,
I don't know that for a fact, but that's what I feel like baseball fans will be. They will think like that, most of them.
See, you say baseball fan. So this is what I am curious of, because I don't know the answer to this. So we're all baseball fans. We've made it well known how we feel about this. But I am curious of the just, you know, novice, average, just not serious baseball fans, if they look at it as, okay, 50 games, yeah, I'll pay attention to that. I don't really care who wins. Should be entertaining, because, as we just said, it is a little more wide open, or a lot more wide open now with a shortened season like that. I wonder what that does in the conversation of getting new fans on a sport if there are those that just don't care and so they'll watch anyway.
The cost of not playing is going to be a great one, because they have turned off so many people because of the way they have approached this. I am not as much concerned with playing 54 as opposed to 74, but although I 100% agree that baseball is a game where the best teams are separated over the long haul, and that's why they play so many games, is that is the essence of baseball. It's the missed opportunity to play and show some spirit here of compromise and leadership in this world where we're trying to get through one of the toughest times that we've ever had to try to get through, for because of the virus and because of everything they're going through right now. And yet they've chose to put the blinders on and take it to the level that they've taken it here. It's just crushing to me for all the people who love the game. There's going to be a big cost. Imagine what it could have been like for baseball to come out on a daily basis through the month of July and have almost an exclusive window, where that could help. Even if you were sacrificing something in the short term, if you're a player or an owner, what would the gain be as a result in the coming years because of what happened? Instead, you take a loss now, and the loss is going to, I think, have a much more far-reaching effect over the next few years because of the feeling it's given people. And then you start your season when everybody else does, probably, and it's going to get drowned out. I think there'll be a lot of people that never really start to engage the season that otherwise would.
Yep. G-Money is up next. What's up?
All right. So I'm not a huge baseball fan. I'm very novice. So you wanted to hear it from a novice baseball fan's perspective. First of all, somebody should at least give y'all some cheese or crackers with all that wine y'all doing, because y'all not getting entertained for the full season. That's first. I will actually watch baseball because it will mean more. It's not as long of a season. And you're comparing whoever wins it to last year, that's apples and oranges, right? So everybody is dealt the same hand. I think it will be more impressive for whoever wins because you didn't have time to gel with your team, so you really have to be committed individually as a player to make sure you bring your best game from day one, all right? So it's kind of like the NFL where pretty much every game really matters. It's going to be no different than baseball where really every game is going to matter. You can't BS your way through a third of the season and then get on a hot streak. So to me, it will actually draw me in as a fan to see who really takes off and who was really on it while they had all of this downtime. My last point is I can understand, Willie, your math makes complete and total sense. However, if you sign a contract and say you're going to pay me X amount per game, I don't feel like I should have to take a prorated bonus, right? You agree to the contract. These are guaranteed contracts. Just pay what the contract says. It shouldn't have even gotten to wanting the players to take a pay cut here and there. And I get it. A lot of people have been laid off from work. You know, you say they should take that into account. But they're millionaires. They're not the same. Apples and oranges. So, again, the players, they contract. They should have been paid their prorated bonus. You're talking about billionaires who are losing a little bit versus millionaires. So that's the side that I come on. So that's just my take. Enjoy the show, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you can go in circles talking about, you know, who should make the sacrifice, should the owners or the players. But that is the conclusion I draw, is there should be a little sacrifice on both sides for this unique situation. And the biggest problem at the start was that they agreed, and I don't know if I would use the word agree, but it's called a, quote, agreement on March 26th, that, okay, we'll give you the service time, and we will prorate your salaries. The players were like, done. That's it. But there is language in that agreement that says we need to revisit this and have a new negotiation if there are not going to be any fans. And you know what? That's what happened. But ever since then, they can't agree on what they agreed on of what should happen. But I just think with a little bit of give on both sides, then they could have come to a very reasonable conclusion where they would have played a lot more games, the players would have made more money, and the season would have been much more authentic.
We'll come back and start the fourth and final hour with former Titan safety Bernard Pollard. That is next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.